Hello, and welcome everyone to today's USOPC board briefing. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session. To register to ask a question at any time, please press star one on your telephone keypad. Please note this call is being recorded and that we are standing by if you should need any assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the meeting over to John Mason. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you, Chelsea. Hi, everyone. It's great to be here today following the first meeting of the year for the USOPC board, and I'm pleased to be here with USOPC board chair Gene Sykes and USOPC CEO Sarah Hirshland. We will start with both of them offering some opening remarks, and then after that, we'll open the line to questions for the time that we have remaining. I know we're eager to get started, so I think I will stop there and pass the line over to Gene. Go ahead, Gene.
Thanks, John. Good afternoon, everyone. We had a great first board meeting of the year and another valuable opportunity to discuss the work of the organization and the Olympic and Paralympic landscape. It was an opportunity to recap the Milano Cortina Games, evaluating the performance of the teams, the USOPC, and the experience of our entire community. We all certainly came away feeling great about the excellence of Team USA athletes and heartened by the performance of the USOPC and the NGBs. The exceptional amount of work that goes into the games by the organizing committee, the IOC, and the NOCs can be lost because it can seem ordinary. The truth is that the mechanics of the games are anything but ordinary. It was a remarkable event, and from the organizing committee leadership to the volunteers, to the fans, and the people of Italy who welcomed the world, I want to give a sincere thanks. To Sarah and the USOPC staff and to our NGB partners, I want to say thank you and well done. Team USA showed up in profound ways on and off the field of play. And of course, and foremost to the athletes, simply outstanding. You carried yourself with a talent that makes us stand up and cheer, sometimes almost in disbelief at what we're witnessing. And you also carry the pride of your community and the entire nation. For that, we're eternally grateful. Looking further out, we have the incredible honor and opportunity of serving as the host NOC twice in one decade, in fact, twice in the next 8 years, when we welcome the world to LA 28 and Utah 2034. The LA Games are growing ever closer, and the work to support Team USA and to be a great partner to the NGBs and the organizing committee is in full swing. It's an exciting time in the Olympic and Paralympic movements in the United States. I'll start things off today by providing you with a short overview of what we discussed in the board meeting, and then Sarah will give some more details. As always, we appreciate you taking the time to join us. The board did take two actions on matters of NGB certification today. The first action was to certify USA Lacrosse as the national governing body for the sport, which will make its Olympic debut at the LA 28 Games. Lacrosse has been great to work with, committed to being a good partner to the athletes, to the community, and the Olympic movement. We're very pleased to continue partnering with lacrosse moving forward and to celebrate this incredible, fast-growing global sport. The second action was to certify USA Surfing as the national governing body for the sport of surfing in the United States effective June 1st. Surfing is a sport that has deep roots in Southern California and will no doubt be a highlight of the LA 28 Games. The obligation of the NGB is significant, and the process by which we determine capabilities in the long and short term is one we take very seriously. USA Surfing's new leadership and new approach has made this moment possible, and we look forward to a positive and collaborative working relationship as we deliver on the promise of LA 28 and beyond. We also had an update from the LA 28 leadership team. Reynold Huber, CEO of LA 28, and John Slusher, CEO of the commercial operations of LA 28, both made very encouraging and extensive reports to us. LA 28 is making tremendous progress. Operationally, they have done a number of things in the community. They released their look of the games based on the super bloom in Southern California. You're beginning to see evidence of it all over the place, both in the city and in sponsor activation and so forth. They have built a team that is now quite a large team and will be as many as 5,000 full-time members by the time of the games, with tens of thousands of volunteers. Their big, complicated project now feels very near, and they've made very impressive progress. Quite substantively on the revenue side, John Slusher and the commercial team have done incredibly well with commercial sponsorship sales, having $900 million or more in commercial sponsorship commitments in 2025, and they're well on their way to a very, very good 2026. So we're quite excited about the progress from that standpoint. And then, of course, many people know they're in the process right now of their first ticket sales draw, if you will. And there was a registration process over a month. They had a tremendous number of registrations. They've shared with us the number, which they haven't shared publicly, but it's incredibly impressive. And they've been selling tickets at a remarkable rate. I would also say they've taken great efforts to make sure the tickets are available at all prices. Over a million tickets will be priced at $28 per seat. So we were quite encouraged to hear from them and quite confident in the direction of LA 28 from an operational standpoint. We also had a report from the Team USA Athletes Commission, which is now served by a new executive director, Olympian Funmi Blakemore. She gave us a report, and we were very happy to both meet her for the first time and have a report from the leadership of the Team USA AC. Before I close today, I want to extend congratulations to Declan Farmer on being elected to the International Paralympic Committee Athletes Council. Declan made his Paralympic debut at just 16 years old at the Sochi 2014 Games, where he won his first gold medal. And he just won his fourth gold medal in Milano Cortina, continuing an incredible legacy of both team and personal success in para ice hockey. In fact, in addition to his medal win at Milano Cortina, he also became the all-time leading point scorer in Paralympic Winter Games history. Declan has set the standard for excellence in sport, a leader on and off the ice, and now he has the great opportunity to extend that leadership into the governance of the Paralympic movement. The athletes of the world are lucky to have him as a strong and principled voice. Congratulations, Declan, and thanks to the Team USA AC and the USOP staff for helping Declan achieve this honor. I might say Declan joins Paralympic triathlete Brad Snyder, who was already a member of the USOPC board and was elected late last year to join the governing board or governing council of the IPC. To have two members of the U.S. community engaged in senior leadership at the IPC is a real achievement for us, and I think demonstrates our commitment to the Paralympic movement. As always, I want to give my thanks to my fellow board members and honor and respect the time and effort they give to making the USOPC the best it can be in service of Team USA and the Olympic and Paralympic movements. We have a busy year ahead and will rely on the expertise and experience of this group. To my friend and colleague, Sarah, who continues to lead this organization with great skill and focus, I also offer my deep appreciation. We have every reason to be excited about the road to LA and beyond, and the many exciting moments ahead for Team USA. Now over to Sarah.
Thank you, Gene, and good afternoon, everyone. Let me add my thanks for taking time to be with us this afternoon. It is clear that this year will be anything but a quiet year. As soon as we landed back in the U.S. from our time in Italy, we have hit the ground running. I suspect this will be the busiest stretch of activity potentially in our history as we work in parallel paths to advance Team USA and to host both the 28 and 34 games. Lots going on and lots of fun to be had in the future. I want to take a few minutes just to cover off on some important work and share a few updates as we're still celebrating Milan Cortina, as you can imagine. Put very simply, it was a wonderful Games. I am incredibly proud of the athletes who never cease to amaze us in tough circumstances and against increasingly stronger competition across the board. I want to highlight some points that are particularly meaningful to us as we look back and as we learn and assess our performance for future planning. The 2026 games will really be characterized for us by the breadth of Team USA. We had stars, and they were masterful under great expectation. And we also had medals spread across 85 Olympic athletes and 28 Paralympic athletes. And Team USA medaled in 11 of 16 sports, more than any other nation, and in 4 of 5 Paralympic sports. In Italy, 58 athletes stepped onto an Olympic podium for the first time. This is proof that competition to make Team USA is alive and well, and that there is a current generation that aspires to the great heights of the athletes that came before them. We are incredibly pleased to see this great depth and a maturing high-performance system in winter sport. That system is informed by a commitment and cooperative plan led by our sport performance team and in cooperation with all of the winter NGBs that really kicked off in 2020. The goal then was clear: compete across the entire winter sport program and be a consistent podium nation at the Winter Games. From an NOC perspective, that reflects a team that showed up focused, supported, and ready across the board. I am incredibly proud of this organization for the strong collaboration with the NGBs, from the groundwork of sport performance to the innovation we undertook to the hands-on support in Italy, and for the attentive and superb care of the sports medicine team. And of course, for the work of games operations, you know the logistics were challenging, an extraordinarily complex games environment, and our community across the board really was at its best. And while I could spend ample time going through athlete by athlete and moment by moment from a sport perspective, I'm not going to do that. I know you've all been there, you've seen them, you've watched highlight videos, and many of you reported on their incredible success. So I will simply say thank you for that attention. Thank you for helping us celebrate these athletes. And I'll turn my attention to the incredible success that we saw in engagement of the community. Whether you look at NBC and their viewership numbers from the most watched opening ceremony in 12 years through the closing ceremony, Milan Cortina averaged 23.5 million viewers across NBC's properties, an incredible achievement, up 96% from the Beijing Games 4 years earlier. We're thrilled to see that level of engagement. And working in concert with the broadcasts, our Team USA social and digital channels also work together to create a real flywheel effect, driving engagement across the web, social channels, email, and certainly tune in. Nearly all of our social and brand metrics surpassed our growth targets, which were really developed from a Paris versus Tokyo growth rate. A couple of numbers: 62.3 million engagements with our channels, which was an increase of 296%. 1.4 million new social followers, which was an increase of 271%. And maybe more, most importantly, and certainly near and dear to myself, to our staff, and to our purpose, Team USA content featured every single Olympian and Paralympian on the Team USA roster. We are incredibly proud of that, and it's really important that we honor the athletes and promote and celebrate each and every one of them who make Team USA. We're thrilled we had a chance to do that in Milan Cortina. And as such, we find ourselves, the momentum we have heading into LA 2028 is real. Paris and Milan results are evidence of a system that is working hard in support of athletes. Add in some home soil and home crowds, and we feel the conditions for something very special are coming together quite nicely. Let me turn my attention to college sports. You know, this has been a priority topic for us here and, frankly, across the country. Between Paris and Milan, and we're celebrating performance built specifically on the collegiate sports pipeline. At Paris, 75% of Olympians, 53% of Paralympians had collegiate affiliations, representing 231 schools and 71 different conferences. In Milan Cortina, 20 colleges had athletes on the Olympic podium. As we know, as football economics force universities to spend more to stay competitive, Olympic sport programs can often be the first budgets to be cut. When those programs disappear, the pipeline shrinks and the ripple effects that reach all the way the ripple effects reach all the way to the Olympic and Paralympic Games. This is where that impact hits home for us here at Team USA. And not just for the current generation, but we're very focused on future generations as well. Sitting in my seat, I want to be clear that this threat to the pipeline here in the United States is occurring at the same time the global competition is intensifying, with many nations investing aggressively in centralized athlete development. On March 6th, I was invited to attend and speak at a White House roundtable convened to address the college sports issue. My goal was straightforward: clearly state the case that the college system is the backbone of Team USA's success, and that it cannot be taken for granted if we expect continued success, and to call on Congress to pass legislation stabilizing collegiate sport before the crisis fully arrives. Bipartisan congressional legislation to lock in sustained long-term investment is critical. Rest assured, we are outcome-focused and a partner to all who wish to address this very real and timely issue. And I want to shift gears again because we have other exciting news. Last week, the USOPC officially transitioned management of the U.S. Para-Nordic Ski Team to U.S. Ski and Snowboard, ending a 12-year period in which the USOPC directly managed that program. The transition comes off the program's best-ever games performance. Team USA's Para-Nordic skiers won 10 gold medals and 15 total medals in Milan Cortina, both U.S. records for the sport. This is a great solution as we are entrusting U.S. Ski and Snowboard with the most successful Para-Nordic team in the world, one led by all-time greats and with plenty of up-and-coming talent. It's important to note, this is part of a broader para-sport strategy. This move follows U.S. Ski and Snowboard's integration of para-snowboard and para-alpine, a deliberate USOPC-supported effort to embed Paralympic programs within established NGB infrastructure, rather than manage them centrally or here in our shop. And we're thrilled to be making this commitment to giving Paralympic athletes the resources, structure, and ambition they deserve. I want to offer my thanks to Sophie Goldschmidt and her entire team at U.S. Ski and Snowboard for their partnership and their commitment to making this wildly successful. And thanks to the staff here at the USOPC who has given a ton to building and supporting this program over more than a decade. Thanks again for being here, and with that, I'll hand the line back to John.
Great. Thank you, Jean. Thank you, Sarah. I think we can hand the line back to Chelsea, who will come for questions. Go ahead, Chelsea.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your keypad. To leave the queue at any time, please press star 2. Once again, that is star 1 to ask a question. And we do ask that you please limit yourself to one question only, and you can re-queue for follow-ups. We'll pause for a moment to allow questions to queue. Our first question will come from Lisa Roach with Deseret News. Lisa, your line's open. Make sure you're not muted.
Thank you. This is for either Jean or Sarah. With all that's on your plate with LA being as close as it is, I'm wondering what goals you have for the Utah Organizing Committee for 2034 in the coming year. They've discussed that and talked about things like possibly even signing an existing sponsor to a renewal contract in the coming year. Could you talk about the larger goals and whether or not we may actually see some sponsors come on board? Thank you.
Hi, Lisa. Great to hear from you. And you are right. We are certainly focused on LA 28, but there is so much overlap and so much to learn and so much to be done for Utah that we are in constant touch and certainly have a great partnership with the now forming and still quite small organizing group there. The reference to sponsorship is relevant. Starting in January of 2027, we have the opportunity to begin renewal discussions that would take effect after the LA Games in 2029. So that's probably what you're referencing, that there is some relatively timely work being done with us and with the Utah Organizing Group to prepare ourselves to start to have that partnership come into play and renewal discussions to start to happen. Whether there will be a renewal this year or not, I don't know, but certainly as we start in 2027, our expectations is that we will begin to focus in earnest on the 29 and beyond period of time, and we'll do that in close partnership with the Utah Organizing Committee for sure. I would say in addition to that, there's a lot of work being done in Utah. I hope you had an opportunity to attend their recent parade. It's an incredible community that celebrates Olympians and Paralympians, whether the games are in Utah or not, and they will continue to do that. They continue to host World Cups, World Championships, competitions, and an enormous number of athletes, Team USA and otherwise, in training. So there's always plenty going on in Utah.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rachel Bachman with the Wall Street Journal.
Hi, Sarah and Jean. Thanks for taking the time and congratulations on a successful Olympics.
Thanks, Rachel.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yep.
I want to ask about Casey Wasserman. He found his appearance in the Epstein files to be so disruptive that he apologized to his employees and clients and put his talent agency up for sale. Yet he's still in charge of LA 28. What do you and the USOPC board believe his role should be with LA 28 going forward?
Maybe I'll take that one. Thanks very much. There have been recent reports regarding Casey Wasserman. They've raised concerns across our community. We take the concerns seriously. We're stewards of the Olympic and Paralympic movement in the United States, and we're committed to upholding and consistently demonstrating the values that define it. The USOPC board has actually had many discussions on this topic, and we've actively engaged and listened to our stakeholders, including athletes, and we're closely monitoring the impact on our community. We've also shared our concerns directly with the LA 28 board, which is responsible for determining who serves as its chair. But separate from the LA 28 board, as I think we indicated, or I indicated in the opening statement, LA 28's leadership, Reynold Hoover and John Slusher, but many other people among the hundreds of people who work for LA 28, have continued to assemble a very strong team and show measurable progress on all the fundamental things that they need to do to make the games a very, very strong games and have a remarkable experience. We remain very confident that progress is both evident and very solid. And that will involve the planning with partners, athlete engagement, public support, and corporate interest, all of which remain very strong and I think very encouraging. The ongoing committee is executing effectively and we're very happy to work with them.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rich Perelman with the Sports Examiner.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you guys for doing this. I'd like to follow up on Rachel's question, whether this is for Jean or for Sarah. Could you address what appears to be a rising level of anger by the LA City Council, especially at a hearing yesterday, and people in the Southern California area who have been very unhappy about the ticket sale performance of the technical system and the 24% service fees attached to the ticket prices? Thank you.
Sure, I'll be happy to take that, Rich. How are you doing? It's nice to talk to you. We actually had a very thorough discussion with the LA 28 team about this today. They're not only aware of the issue, but they had given us a lot to think about. The 24% ticket charge is actually a standard charge. It's sort of a normal charge that is embedded in the ticket price. So from their standpoint, I think they're operating with professional operators in sports and event ticketing that have worked with events all around the world. And honestly, I think they're part of a framework that is a framework they accept as opposed to challenging it. We're trying to make it something different. The ticket prices, there are clearly some tickets which are high priced, but they've made a great effort to have low price tickets. They'll have a million tickets priced to $28 and $28 tickets for all metal events. So I know they're thinking very seriously about how to manage the ticket activity so that it satisfies everybody, and that's on their mind. With regard to the anger within the LA City Council, to be honest with you, I think the frustration has been over a certain agreement that has not yet been completed with the city of LA, and I believe actually that has a lot to do with various parts of the city administration not having the same point of view, and LA 28 trying to bring things to a conclusion and reach an agreement. I think that's been challenging, but we remain confident that they'll do a very good job.
All right, thank you. We'll go to the next question from Danielle Lerner with USA Today.
Hi, good afternoon. This question is for either Sarah or Jean. Has the IOC provided any further guidance about the required genetic testing for female athletes, and do you know how much it will cost and who's going to pay for it?
Maybe I can take that one as well. I don't think the IOC has given direction about exactly how to implement the new policy guidance they provided about protecting the female category and the SRY testing. I think they understand there is going to be quite a bit of detail that will need to be provided to the sports federations and athletes and everybody else in the Olympic community, which is a community they're addressing. So it's definitely something that will be the follow-up to what they've released so far. There is quite a bit of detail in what they've said, but I think on some of the points that you asked about, they have not given guidance to us yet at this stage.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Joe Donahue with Bird's Nest Media.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I wanted to maybe pivot a little bit and talk about, so we had Milano Cortina, and you can always learn something from any Olympic Games. So as you look maybe more immediately to LA 28, and as you look towards Utah 2034, what are some of the learning experiences that you're going to bring from Milano Cortina that will help improve these upcoming games as you partner with the organizing committees?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think there are learnings on a number of fronts. And I'll maybe just start with operationally. Because of the dispersed nature of the games in Milano Cortina, our preparations and our logistical plan was distinct from anything we'd done before, and we learned a lot. We actually ended up partnering with other countries in ways that we had not done before, particularly as it related to health and medicine. And I think some of those logistical, I would say what were necessities, have become advantages that we'll deploy regardless of the footprint of games going forward. So I think there's some very practical, tactical, on-the-ground examples like that we walked away feeling really quite good about. I think we always tend to be very active in dialogue with the organizing committee as one of the larger delegations and one of the larger sort of footprints. We come with a lot of people. And we come with a lot of support teams and, frankly, a lot of demands as it relates to the scale of our delegation. And so we tend to have a very close relationship with the organizing committee. And I think the benefits of that, both of us being a large delegation, of us having partnerships with the LA organizing team, who had an enormous number of their own staff on the ground learning operationally, that sort of trifecta of the existing organizing committee, our future organizing committees, and being a large National Olympic Committee is a great combination for all of us to work together and learning. I'll tell you, there are also commercial things that we're talking about, how merchandise is deployed. I think there will be a number of things that come out of the learning as we look forward. And certainly our team is always focused both on what can we learn from an athlete perspective support perspective, but also what can we learn in how we bring our athlete stories to life and engage consumers in different ways. And we'll continue to partner with the IOC, with our broadcast partners, and we share those learnings with other countries as well so that that can deploy information and best practices around the world.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Chipni Nguyen with Los Angeles Times.
Hi, I just wanted to follow up on Rich's question about ticketing. Some of the pushback that we've heard recently is just there's been kind of confusion about what tickets are available, when are they available. We've seen a lot of people talking about tickets being sold out very quickly, and they don't know if they're ever going to be available again in the future. Just what conversations have you had with LA 28 in terms of the transparency and communication about how tickets are put on sale across the different ticket drops, and also the time slots when people can log in and purchase these tickets?
Well, the first thing I'd say is Gene responding. Thanks for the question. It's a very fair question. And I think LA 28 has the answers to those questions, and I think they should speak on this as opposed to me or me on their behalf. We did talk about this in great detail with them today. And so I know that they're able to give you direction. I think that's right. That's the appropriate place for it to happen. And I think they've given a lot of thought to all of these questions. I think they have really planned for this quite well. And we're pleased with the progress that we understand, and we know that they have to make sure that the community understands the answers to all the questions you raise. And so I think it's fair game to go right back to them.
Thank you. We have time for one more question. That question will come from Donovan Bridgeforth with TechSan 24 News.
Hey guys, thank you for taking the time to do this and your transparency with your question so far. My question is a little bit different beat. At the media summit for the Winter Olympics, we heard several athletes discuss being able to monetize their Olympic content and the barriers to doing that. Is that something that we can expect to see for LA 2028, or has there been any progress?
I would say there are always discussions on how we can continue to work with athletes to drive their earnings, their storytelling, their footprints, et cetera, and balance that with the same, sort of earnings desires and demands and, frankly, requirements, whether it's the Olympic committees of the world or the IOC directly, or the rights that the broadcast content rights holders have. And as you can imagine, it's a bit of a complex ecosystem of navigating who has the ability to do which things. I can tell you we're incredibly encouraged with the progress that we're seeing games over games in the collaboration between all of those entities to ensure that the, to use a cliche, the rising tide floats all boats. And we are in fact seeing that happen. And the more evidence that we have that demonstrates that the greater social content, the more highlights athletes are putting on their social feeds, the more viewers are tuning in to watch. So it really does build on top when we are collaborative and everybody understands how to work together and feed off of each other's storytelling. That's what we've been focused on. It's where we've seen the most progress, and it's working quite effectively. And we are seeing, in fact, the rising tide float all boats. I expect this will continue to evolve as the content environment and platforms continue to evolve.
Thank you. And we've reached our allotted time for questions, so I'd like to turn the call back over to John Mason for any additional or closing remarks.
Great. Thank you, Chelsea. And thanks all of you for joining us today and for your continued interest in Team USA. As always, we will post a recording of this conversation as well as a transcript as soon as we receive them from the service. One additional note for the media on this call, and I know that it's a top of mind for you guys, is that we're getting a lot of questions about LA 28 accreditation already. That process has not yet started, but it is starting soon, and there will be some action that will need to be taken before the end of this year. So we'll keep in touch there. I encourage all of you to visit usopc.org, our media section, for the latest information, all things related to Team USA and LA 28, including the announcement of the first LA 28 World Press Briefing, which will be held this July. Registration for that event is currently open. As always, we will continue to share updates via our website, via our X feed, and you can certainly call if you need anything. Please don't hesitate to reach out, and thank you very much for joining us again today. Take care.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This brings us to the end of today's program. We appreciate your time and participation. You may now disconnect.